Eagles Entertainment.
Everything that moves, I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time. Let's go.
Touchdown.
You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another day, and we're giving you one final preview for Christmas Day as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 508. At the top of today's show, we've got Three and Out, where I chat with my friend Ross Tucker as we talk through three football-centric topics as it pertains to this Philadelphia Eagles football team and this matchup against the Giants on Monday afternoon. You do not want to miss this chat with Ross. Talk a little bit of line play, some football schematics, some talk about defensive stunts and defensive scheme, rotations up front, a lot of different things talked about there in that conversation with Ross. After that, we've got some analysis for this Eagles-Giants matchup with our Eagles game plan crew. So Ike Reese, Mike Quick, Greg Cosell, John Clark, everybody back in the hot seat talking through this matchup against the Giants. A pivotal game for the Eagles as they try to hold on to the NFC East. Now, before we get going here in today's episode, as always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe. Make sure you check out Eagles Game Plan this weekend over on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, the Eagles YouTube page, wherever you get your Eagles content. That said,
how about this for a start?
They've got him again!
What a defensive stop!
Slade, second pick of the game!
Oh, I'm going to have to call him big play.
And this defense does the job. 1, 2, 3 and out.
All right, back again here for Three and Out. My buddy Ross Tucker to talk through just what's on the top of our mind as the Eagles get ready for a holiday matchup here against the rival New York Giants. Ross, we got a lot to break down. Obviously, the Eagles on the in the midst of a three-game losing streak, hoping to end that here this week against the Giants. And the first thing I want to talk about, we talked about a little bit with Greg earlier this week, and I wanted to talk about it with you just because I feel like I'm interested to get an offensive lineman's perspective on it. You know, one of the things that I noticed from the game against Seattle, because everyone wanted to know, all right, what are some of the new changes with Matt Patricia taking over the play calling on defense? Is there anything schematically, is there anything structurally that was different? And, you know, one thing I saw a little bit more of here in this one, mixing up the front looks out of the same personnel groupings. And, you know, again, we talked about this a little bit earlier with Greg here this week on the feed, but one aspect where I did see that a lot was out of their big penny package. So penny, meaning it's a five defensive linemen, one linebacker, and five DBs, as opposed to like a 4-2-5, it would be more of like a 5-1-5. Now, that's what the personnel was. And what we saw out of that personnel package really was three different fronts. You had a 5-1-5, you had a 4-2-5, and you had a 5-2. So you had three different fronts out of the same personnel package. And you know what that means now for an offense in terms of like from a preparation standpoint is that you're going to have a little bit more variety. We can get into like the nitty gritty of who lined up where. I thought that the guys that really were kind of used as those movable chess pieces most often, Patrick Johnson, he lined up as both a defensive end and as a stacked linebacker. I would imagine Nolan Smith is someone that could kind of fit that bell as well moving forward. BG, he played inside and outside. Same with Josh Sweat. Sidney Brown, he would play in the slot. He would play some deep and then also as a stacked linebacker in some of those 5-2 fronts. And so a lot of different variation there in terms of the way that those guys were deployed. So Ross, I want to ask you, when you have a defense that is going to line up in all of those different ways from the same personnel grouping, what does that mean for you as an offensive front?
I think it. I think a couple things. One is, if every time they have the same personnel grouping in, it's the same front, you can have a lot of familiarity with that. And as soon as you see what the personnel grouping is, before the play is even called in the huddle, you're already thinking about, you know, what that personnel grouping means, what that front's going to be. As soon as they call the play, you already can think about your assignment. What are the possibilities out of that front alignment? What are the tendencies? What are the things you need to be keenly aware of? All the little details that you work on all week. If you get up to the line of scrimmage and they're in a different front than you're expecting, then it kind of throws off your mental rhythm, I guess, a little bit. And you have to think a little bit harder and differently about, okay, so this isn't really what I was expecting here, even though they have, you know, big penny personnel in, they're in a 5-2 or they're in a 4-2-5. I wasn't expecting that. I need to mentally like, okay, now who is the Mike linebacker? Like, who is playing this? How are we gonna treat this? So, you know, I think people would be surprised how much time goes into just having players have to be thinking right before the snap, as opposed to already knowing what they're going to do and being able to play faster. The idea being, if you're thinking right before the snap, you're not going to be able to play as fast as if the other team just runs the same defense every play. I can remember, Fran, 2003 December game against the New York Jets. I'm starting at right guard for the Bills. They just lined up in a 3-4 base front and didn't move. Like, they didn't stunt. They didn't blitz. They just played two guys like the whole game.
Yep.
And we were just running the ball with Travis Henry down their throat at will. And we literally, somebody said in the huddle, I can't remember who it was, but like, are they just going to keep staying in this defense? Like, are they just going to sit in this defense? Because it was like we were getting 5 to 15 yards a carry and we were running and we're like, evidently they are, you know, we just kept calling the same play. They stayed in the same defense. And it was like, it was great. It was like high school football. It was amazing. But in the NFL, they're not going to do that very often, especially if you're having success. But the idea being is they don't want you to know in the huddle already what your assignment's going to be, so that you're thinking of like the second and third levels of what's going to happen there. They don't want you to be that comfortable, which is why you see a lot of pre-snap movement. You see guys up on line of scrimmage and they bail. You see guys in the A-gaps, then they either come or one of them comes, the other, like, they want you to be a half step, a quarter step slow, because you're thinking through something else first.
And that's the thing. You know, when you have a defensive front, there are certain runs in your playbook that are going to be really good against that front, and other runs that you would scrap from your game plan going up against that front. And so if you come out, it's like you're going into a job. If you're putting something together, you get some furniture from a furniture store, and you're like, I need my Phillips head screwdriver. And then you show up to put the thing together, and it's not a Phillips head screwdriver. You need your flathead. Well, now you got to go back to your toolkit. You got to go get the screwdriver. That's a wasted drive, a wasted possession in a game of margins. That's something where you get a little bit of a leg up on the competition that way. And so trying to mix up your looks certainly can be favorable in that way. Now, I think it's important to note a couple things. Number one, it's not like the Eagles had not done that at all this year. They did mix that in over the course of the season. Zach Cunningham was a guy that had been moved around. And again, there are other examples of guys. Go back to training camp. We saw Nolan Smith line up in a variety of roles as well over the course of the summer. So like I mentioned, you're going to move guys around. That's part of playing defense in the NFL. But I did feel like we saw a little bit more of that in this game on Monday night. And then the second part of that is that if you are going to change things structurally midstream in season, there are going to be some growing pains that are associated with that, right? And I thought you saw some of that in this game on Monday night. There were some run fits that weren't fitted up perfectly that led to some, you know, 13-yard gain here or an 8-yard gain there that I think typically that defense would have been able to stuff up, but they had the, you know, there were some miscommunications from a run fit standpoint, but that's to be expected. Again, you're trying to make sure that you're gearing up to hopefully win the division, have some home playoff games. And by the time you get to late December into January, that all of that stuff is buttoned up by the time you reach that point. And so that's something I think we'll see from this Eagles defense moving forward. Ross, what would be point number two?
The other thing I wanted to talk about, because I've seen this a lot, I've seen even other people in the media talking about this, sort of the benefits of straight rush for a defensive line versus running games or twists.
Yep.
And it's interesting because I had heard in recent weeks that one of the criticisms of the Eagles defense when Sean Desai was calling the plays was that they were running too many stunts, too many twists. Well, then they played the Seahawks Monday night and they didn't run very many of those at all. And I think I saw where Dan Orlovsky, who's a buddy of mine on ESPN, said, why don't the Eagles run any stunts or twists? So it's one of those things that it
damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. What I would tell you is, if you have really talented rushers, it's less likely you feel like you need to or want to run a lot of stunts or twists. And I'll tell you why, Fran. If I was going against a really good rusher, I'd be so happy if they ran a stunt or a twist, because there's not that many ways to run them. And once I identify that's what's happening, I'm good, right? There's a TE, there's an ET, there's some three-man stunts you can run. But a TE, the tackle's trying to get up the field, the end loops around, okay? I'd much rather have the tackle doing that than having a two-way go and just trying to beat my you-know-what.
Yep.
Right? So I will say this. I think you need to mix it in a little bit so that it's not always straight rush and there is the threat of a stunt, right? Because like if you're doing a drill where you're doing stunts and twists, it can get you sometime if they run straight rush, right? Because you're playing the stunt or the twist or what you're expecting. I don't think you know, with the way the Eagles D line is constituted and them having that many guys that are good one-on-one rushers, I personally would not stunt and twist a lot. I would do it as a changeup every once in a while just to keep the offensive line honest with their sets so that they can't always set horizontal or whatever, not being worried that they could get picked. So it's like the threat of the twist or the stunt where you're trying to pick one of the offensive linemen. That's really all you need to try to affect their set. So I think you should do it a couple times a game, but the truth is the more often teams twist and stunt, it's usually because they don't love what the production is they can get from their guys straight rush.
And I do think, look, we've said it before that there are a lot of ways to skin a cat, right? And I think that when you look at like the top pressure teams in football, I'm looking at the list right now in terms of just pure pressure percentage right now in the NFL. Dallas Cowboys, well out in front, 47.3%. And then if you look at stunt percentage in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys, well, they just happen to be number one in stunt percentage. There's 36.9. Now you rewind to last year, the Philadelphia Eagles were at the top of the pressure chart. They were number one. Guess who was at the bottom of stunt percentage for the majority of the year last year? The Philadelphia Eagles. They ran the least amount of stunts. And so there are lots of ways to be able to create pressure on the quarterback. I agree that typically teams that don't have the guys that can always just win one-on-one are going to stunt a little bit less just because you are going to stunt a little bit more because you're trying to create some of those advantages. I do think that some guys are just pretty good at running stunts, right? And some teams are really, really good at running stunts. And I think that typically there is a feel to it. I've compared it to like pick and roll in basketball, where there is a timing element to it. Some guys are just really good at working in tandem together on those stunts. I remember watching like Vinnie Curry and Brandon Garvey and Fletcher Cox running stunts, back in like 2015, 2014. Those guys were so good at working off of each other. Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox have been really good working off of each other. Fletcher Cox and Hassan Reddick last year were really good at playing off of each other. And so you're going to have some guys that are just really, really good at it. Being able to sell that first move and then loop in. Some guys are very effective. And that's why I think it works for Dallas, right? Because they have a very light, very athletic defensive front. A lot of those guys are very, very undersized. And so when you have that level of athleticism, well, now that can create some of those advantages, whether it's a two-man game or a three-man game. If you're a rangier athlete, you've got that ability to get from A to B a little bit faster. And so that can play into your advantage. So to your point, yeah, it's like the motion conversation, right? And we've had that in this segment over the course of this year. If you want your offense to be better, it doesn't mean just run more motion. Just like if you want your pressure to be better, that doesn't just mean blitz more or run more stunts. Those things are not created equal.
Nope. And variety matters. And I think the stats you had for the Eagles last year is probably a pretty good indicator of how I feel about the situation and yep. what they should be doing.
All right. Well, you're gonna like this one here. I think this one is right in your wheelhouse. This one comes from one of our listeners at home who left the question over on our Apple Podcast page. Michael J left a question over on Apple Podcasts. Fran, Greg, and Ross, thanks so much for the insight into the complexities of the game. My question is, why do the Eagles and many teams rotate their defensive linemen to keep them more rested and fresh, but keep the same offensive lineman in on every single play? I would think that being an offensive lineman would be very exhausting compared to being a defensive lineman. Ross, I don't even want to like give a follow-up question. I'm just going to let you take the floor here on this topic. The rotation of defensive lineman versus O-lineman not rotating. Your thoughts?
Good question. I've had people bring this up a bunch. One thing I will say is there are people in college that rotate offensive linemen more and rotate guys in. I think they do that in college because those guys are getting 80, 90 snaps a game.
Sure.
And they're trying to take some snaps off of some of their guys. And if they have players they think are good enough, they'll rotate them in for a series here or there. The difference, Michael J., number one, D-line is way more tiring than offensive line. Way more. So here's why. First of all, on a run play, if you're a D-lineman, most of the time, you are going to be double teamed at least initially.
Yep.
In a combo block. So you're basically trying to hold your ground against 600 plus pounds of force. That takes a lot. That takes a toll on your body, right? And then not only are you trying to hold your ground when you have 600 plus pounds coming off and firing off at you, but then it's your job to chase the ball carrier, to pursue, to try to make the tackle, to try to get in on the play, right? It's the same. It really is very similar to when I asked, when I was younger, a hockey person, why do these guys sub in and out so much? Why is there a first line, second line, third line, fourth line, and they're constantly rotating them through? And the idea is you're supposed to be going full throttle, right? Yes. Rushing the passer is even more tiring than run defense. It's hard to explain unless you try to do it, but the amount of energy it takes to try to run around or through a person is a lot more than just trying to stand in between that person and somebody else. Which is why a lot of people don't understand why offenses have so much success in no huddle or 2 minute. It's because once you run three or four plays, if you get a first down or two, the D-line is gassed. And so they have a tough time, getting upfield and getting any pressure on the quarterback.
Which we saw, by the way, in that final drive for Seattle, the 92-yard drive where, Fletcher Cox, I believe it was Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Jalen Carter. It was Fletcher Cox and Jalen Carter. They were out there for the first four plays. They had to come out for the second half of that possession just because, they were able to get things going from a hurry-up standpoint. There were no timeouts used in that drive for Seattle, and those guys were not on the field there for those last couple of plays. And to your point, that's one of the benefits of rotating defensive linemen over the course of not just in-game but also over the course of the season is that if those guys are playing 40, 50 snaps as opposed to 70, 80 snaps, that's going to help you in terms of making sure those guys are always going 100% at all times, really maximizing the talent that they've got.
As for the offensive line conversation, offensive line not as tiring, and continuity and chemistry much more important.
Right.
D-line, you're kind of on your own, you have your gap or you have where you need to be.
Unless you're a big stunt team, as we just talked about.
Yeah, offensive line, you're constantly working with the guys next to you. So much of it's mental. And so, you work hard. You try hard not to bring in, not to have a guy get injured and have someone else come in there and kind of mess with that chemistry and continuity that you have going. So There are some teams that do it. Certainly some college teams that do it. I'm not a fan of rotating on the offensive line, but I've certainly seen teams do it.
You know, I'm going to give you some credit because I felt like when I saw this question, I was like, Ross is going to say, well, this is why being offensive lineman is just so much harder because we're out there. Although you took the high road with this conversation, I feel like.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, offensive line is tougher mentally.
Yep.
And it's sort of like controlled aggression.
Mm.
Whereas defensive line is just kind of aggression, right. You know? And no, it's definitely more tiring on D-line. You know, I'm sure there's somebody out there that will try it at some point and think if you rotate an offensive lineman, you're still getting the same benefits of them being fresh like the D-line gets. I just think you're playing with fire from like a mental error and guys not being on the same page standpoint.
31 NFL teams have a hard enough time fielding 5 offensive linemen, much less trying to field 8 or 9, right? I mean, you know, trying to make sure that you have that depth is extremely difficult.
It's a really good point. I will say this, though, Fran. That is why when a team has injuries, or if you watch preseason games,
yep.
In my opinion, the offensive line struggles.
Yeah.
It's because the second string defensive line, those guys play a lot.
Yeah.
Like those guys are Milton Williams and Jalen Carter and, you know, Brandon Graham. Whereas the second string offensive line, those guys barely play. So when they play against each other, like in a game or guys get like, they're not on the same level in terms of how many snaps and experience they have.
Yeah, I mean, it's we can go down a deep rabbit hole here and just like the scarcity of talent and experience at that position and how that could be so valuable. But a conversation for another day. Ross, thanks so much for joining us here once again on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Happy holidays to you and your family, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Fran.
All right, great stuff there from Ross. And as I mentioned earlier, we're also going to hear from our Eagles game plan crew. These are all clips that I left on the cutting room floor. I did all the editing on Wednesday night of Eagles game plan this week, and not everything could make it into the show just due to time constraints, but I saved all of those leftover.
What I want to talk about, though, his mobility and how important it is that everyone's in their place because of his ability to scramble and make plays outside of structure.
You know, Q, I think that's a really important point. And sometimes I watch the tape, and I've watched every game he started, and he's had his ups and downs. But sometimes I feel watching the tape that Brian Daboll tells him, hey, if you don't get a clean look, just take off and try to make a play, because this offense is not good enough to make it and compensate for negative plays. So the last thing you want are sacks, and you certainly don't want him forcing the ball from the pocket, because early in his starts, he was getting sacked a lot in some of those early starts. He hasn't been sacked. There was the game, the Monday night game against the Packers a few weeks ago when they came from behind. He did not get sacked. He did not commit a turnover. And I think that's the way they have to play. So it wouldn't surprise me, Q, if what you said is true, if that they say to him, hey, if it's not clean, if you don't get that clean primary look and you're a little uncomfortable, you know what? Take off, get positive yards. Hey, we're okay being 2nd and 8, but we don't want to be 2nd and 15.
So Tommy DeVito, ever since he's taken over, this team has sort of found ways to move the ball offensively and win games. I give him a lot of credit for that. Brian Daboll doing a nice job of trying to design an offense that he can sort of shine in. But I look at this offense, G, not a lot of household names over there, but there is one name that we're all familiar with, and that's Saquon Barkley. Talk about his role in this offense and how they like to use him, not only in the running game, but in the passing game at times as well.
Yeah, obviously, they want him to be the foundation of what they do. They want to start with Barkley. Barkley's been an interesting runner throughout his career. This even goes back to Penn State. He's an explosive back. And any time, if he gets a crease, he can take it to the house. But the thing about him, which has sort of been interesting, is he's never really been a true sustainer. He's not a guy, despite his size and the way he looks, that when it's blocked for 2, he gets 6. He's never really been that kind of guy, and he hasn't really been a sustaining runner. Now, he's very good as a receiver when they detach him from the formation, and that's something that the Eagles must be aware of. He can do that very, very well, and that's another way to possibly present clean reads for Tommy DeVito. If you can split him out, maybe go empty, because an empty the ball usually gets out quick anyway. So we'll see if they do that. But as a runner, you've just got to make sure you prevent those 30, 40, 60-yard runs. But he's not a great sustaining runner.
Yeah, and Saquon only had 14 yards in New Orleans. They could not get him going. And they were 2 for 16 on third down, so that was a big part of it.
All right. Yeah, no, third down's critical, obviously, and you can't be 2 for 16.
And specifically, you just mentioned Eli Ricks and Kelee Ringo. We saw a tough final drive for James Bradbury in the secondary, but how did you think those young guys improved?
Well, I thought the young players played with assertiveness and confidence, right? And so they were put in a position that fits their strength, big corners on the outside, allowed to get up. You know, going up against a guy like DK Metcalf, they didn't seem to be intimidated by the receiver, who's as good as DK. And with his size, they felt like they matched up pretty good with him. So I like what I saw from those young players. Excited to see more of them as the season goes along.
And I think they're just going to get better as the season goes along. As they play more ball, I think they're just going to get better and better. I really love what I saw out of Kelee Ringo. Big corners like that, I know how difficult they can be, especially if they're able to get their hands on you. And then he's shown the speed now that he can run with the faster receivers. I like that.
I'll throw this in there too. I noticed there was more of a three safety look in this defense this past week. And, I love Sidney Brown. And they're going to have to do a great job to continue to coach him up and learn how to control some of that aggression and know when to be assertive and attack and when you need to break down and make certain plays. But I'd rather have to coach a guy to sort of dial it back a little bit versus trying to get him going. I love the three safety look because there's some athleticism there, and there's a way that Matt Patricia can be versatile in some of the things he wants to do defensively when you have guys that are sort of in that hybrid look.
We saw some hitting that we haven't seen for a while from the secondary. Kelee Ringo, the hit on the sideline that he had, and you mentioned Sidney Brown. He's a guy that plays the game with the aggression that you like from your defensive backs. He's a guy that when you're a wide receiver, you think about, I don't really want to run in his zone because that's the kind of guy that can put you on the shelf. He will hit you and he will make you hurt. But you're right. He has to at sometimes dial it back a little bit because he's so aggressive. Sometimes the offense will use that against him that he's that aggressive.
Now, on that final drive in Seattle where the Eagles gave up the 92-yard drive, I kept waiting for that closeout from the defensive line. And as the defense goes, it's the defensive line that pushes the defense. So what is the issue with not getting the pressure or the sacks, especially in the second half?
You know what? I wish I could just put my finger on one thing. I think it would be a lot easier to fix if it was just that simple. I think it's different things. At certain times in the game, we got to find a way to get Josh Sweat going, right? He's probably our second best pass rusher outside of Hassan Reddick, particularly from that outside. He's been in a little bit of a cold stretch here, but he's getting there. He's getting closer. And I think against this offensive line, there's going to be some opportunities there against this Giants offensive line. You start with the guys in the inside that are going to cause havoc and draw extra attention. I think that's going to allow for Reddick and Sweat to have big days on the outside. They're close. They're getting there. And I think over these next few weeks, you're going to start to see them rev it up a little bit. And I think we can start to see our defensive line getting back to putting pressure on the quarterback, getting sacks, and causing turnovers.
Let me throw this in, because we talked about this earlier in the season, and I think it holds true today. Teams are going to give the Eagles their best game. Yeah. Because most teams are measuring themselves by how well they play against this team. So we're seeing it play out week after week that teams are giving the Eagles their best football. Gee, to that point, on third downs, they're one of the best in football. And Wink Martindale on the back end is doing a lot of changing the picture. The pre-snap picture is not going to be what the post-snap picture is. How important is that in this game?
That's absolutely critical, and you're seeing that a lot around the league, Q, and that's so important because what you're trying to get as an offense for your quarterback, particularly on third down, is you're trying to get him a clear picture of what the defense is before the snap of the ball so he can react quicker, he can process quicker. What Martindale does a great job of is not giving you a clear picture. Two other quick things I'd mention that he does exceptionally well. He dictates your protections with his defensive fronts So then he knows how to break down those protections. And the second thing you have to be aware of with him is he uses his safeties, McKinney and Pinnick, as blitzers off the edge quite a bit. And you really have to be aware of that.
All right, Greg, nice job. Happy holidays. I know you're going to be working over the holidays. A lot of NFL action, but enjoy it.
All right, guys, thanks so much.
And when you look at the Eagles offense, this is three straight games with 19 points or less.
Yeah.
But last year against the Giants, the Eagles swept the Giants all three games, and Jalen Hurts looked fantastic. Is this right time, right place for this offense to get going?
Well, I saw some things last week that I was encouraged by. You know, running the football the way they did effectively early in the game, Jalen being a part of the running game. I even thought Jalen, from a passing standpoint, looked in rhythm early in the game. You know, what I thought hampered them last week was self-inflicted penalties, bad plays, and then not taking advantage of moving the football down the field. They had opportunities to put way more points on the board than 17, but we still got to clean up the things that hurt us all the time. But I thought from Jalen's standpoint, especially considering how he felt prior coming into the game, I thought he was playing a heck of a football game until we had the mistakes late in the game.
Yeah, and the mistakes really hurt because you're moving the ball, you got this rhythm going on, but then something, you get a wrench in the controls, and then something goes haywire. But I agree with you. Jalen played, for the most part, played a really sharp football game. The timing was there. The ball placement was there, getting the ball to the right people. But as a quarterback, you can do that 90% of the time. But in those crunch situations, if you make a mistake, it really hurts your offense. And I thought that's kind of what happened in the game.
And we saw against the Seahawks, you had 12-play drive, 15 and 16-play drives. Yeah. They were running the ball, Jalen, DeAndre Swift. And that's how they had some success against the Giants last year. Do you think that they will play that type of offensive football? Just hold the ball, move it methodically down the field, control the clock.
I think that is the most important thing. And the way that this team really has success is playing the game methodical. You don't want to have to take shots down the field when you're moving the football and when you're in rhythm. I think when this team is patient, when they're not going for the big play, they can move the ball on anybody, because in that small window, there are so many options in this offense that they're able to move the ball. There's nothing wrong with the 12-play, with the 14-play drive. When this team doesn't lose patience, they move the ball and they score points on any team in this league.
Yeah, and patience is key, because I'm going to tell you, from a defensive standpoint, that's the game plan, is to make you use as many plays as possible versus the chunk plays, and the defense is counting on you to make a mistake somewhere in there.
That's right.
Within those 12 to 15 plays. So as an offense, sure, you want to be able to score as quickly as possible, but understanding the defense isn't going to allow that, you have to sort of take what they're giving you and not get impatient and try to force plays. And then the other key thing about that is when you're having these elongated drives, 13, 14, 15 plays, 6, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
The key is to get a touchdown
right
at the end of those drives. That's where you feel good about yourself. It's when you don't get the touchdown and you wind up having to kick a field goal. That's almost a win for the defense when they hold you to only a field goal and you have the ball that long.
Maybe not so much the past few weeks, but this team is noted for being an explosive team.
Yeah.
And teams are not going to allow this team to have those explosive plays. So they're going to keep safeties back. They're going to force this team to have those long methodical drives that are 12, 14 play drives. And what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. You wear down the defense, number one. And then if you're able to score touchdowns at the end of that, you're way ahead of the game.
Understand the defense is counting on you, or hoping you get impatient.
Yes.
And try to make that big play so they can capitalize off of it. So to Q's point, there's nothing wrong with possessing a football and going down there and getting points, because that defense wants you, or they're relying on you to be thirsty for that big play so that they can capitalize on it.
And as always, be sure to check out Eagles Game Plan. It goes up digitally on Sunday this week across all Eagles channels. Or if you live in the Philadelphia area here, Sunday morning, NBC 10 at 10 a.m. Still sticking with it with the holiday weekend. Great stuff there from the Eagles Game Plan crew. Thanks to all of them. And thanks to all of you out there as well for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our X's and O's content here with Eagles Entertainment. That being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.